So the title of the talk is The Parami of Equanimity, Surfing the Waves of Change. It's the 12th talk in the series on the paramis. It's also the 10th parami. In the Pali language, equanimity is upekkha, and it is one of the four Brahma Viharas, the great movements of the heart. And it's the last parami. And there is something very, very developed and I would say high, except that's not a good language, about equanimity. It is often regarded as the gateway to Nibbana, to final awakening. But like all the paramis, you can also look at it as a daily life quality, a personality factor, which allows us to be more wisely, deeply, leading a more liberated life. And the quality is steadiness, to be steady in the midst of change, not to be knocked over or destroyed or disturbed by whatever arises. It's a quality, you know, like almost like a ship that is going on the waves easily and steadily, and not every wave doesn't knock it. It's got a steadiness. Equanimity is coming from the English word equal, chave. But of course it's not, I'll talk about that in a minute, but it's not that everything is chave. But it has this sense of balance. It's really important as part of our spiritual life, because our spiritual life is the opposite of anesthesia, hardama. Spiritual life involves seeing, it involves being open, it involves sensitivity. Mindfulness is being sensitive, is being aware, is allowing the world in and not shutting it out. Mindfulness is about allowing the world in. It's about caring. It's the opposite of living automatic life. It's the opposite of suppression, hadhaka. It's allowing the world in. But when we do that, we also allow in our vulnerability, our pigiut, our fragility, our shavirut, that life is a thread. We're hanging on a thread, is life. There's nothing we can really rely on. So, our spiritual life allows everything in, including the demons and the monsters that are in the subconscious mind or in the human collective mind. We allow everything. And equanimity is needed because we're right in the middle of suffering. And we have to stay in the middle and not be cut off and living automatic life based on fear and protection. So we need something instead of the armor, the shirion, that is the usual problem of human life. But when we build a choma, we build a protective wall around us based on fear and on survival, and that leads us to suffering. It leads us to a difficult life of always looking for the comfort and the protection and the safety. So, but we need protection. So, the equanimity is a kind of inner protection that is allowing us to receive suffering of ourselves and other beings without being destroyed. I once heard a nice description from a Sufi that said there are three ways, there are three images of protection in the spiritual life. One is the rock. And the rock sits there, has been there 1,000 years, very steady, very strong. The water will come flowing by the rock and it doesn't move. Another is the glass. Things go through. It's shakuf. It doesn't stick. Nothing sticks. It passes through. And the third is the basket. And the basket is very light, and the wind can blow the basket, and it turns over and over, but it stays intact, whole. It isn't destroyed because it's so light. It's a bit like the Lao Tzu poem about grass that never breaks because it can bend. So here are three images that you might just like to think about of protection. We talk also about the eye of the storm, Eina Seira. The eye of the storm is a bit like the rock. It's a little bit like a safe place. In the Dharma would tend to go for the glass image or the basket image rather than the rock image. However, the rock is also okay. The fact that we sit here 45 minutes or half an hour together, steady, not moving, allowing what comes up, we sit like a rock. And yeah, indeed, there are some demons that turn up from the subconscious mind. Worries and concerns will come. Disturbances will happen. But we are sitting steady. It is learning a different way of protection, even if it's the rock, which is a little bit like a thing. The deeper level of protection in the Dharma is the emptiness, is not so much the rock, more the glass or the basket, is emptiness, where things don't stick. Disturbance doesn't have a place because we cannot be disturbed, because it's only a self that can be disturbed. Disturbance happens because we allow disturbance, we allow ourselves to be disturbed, or upset, or knocked over. You know the Zen story of the empty boat, a very famous story. There is a passenger comes to a boatman and says, "I want to cross the river." And the boatman says, "Okay, let's go." And they're in the middle of the river, and another boat comes full of people and knocks into this boat. And the boatman starts to shout, "Why you do this, you stupid people? Look where you're going, you're damaging my boat." So they carry on, and then another boat comes and also knocks into this one. But it's empty, there's no one inside. And the boatman does nothing. And the passenger says, why don't you shout? You shouted at the boat before, but now you don't shout at this boat. And the boatman says, well, there's no one there to shout at. And that's the empty boat. If we're empty, there's nobody to shout at. There's nobody in there to be disturbed. There's nobody in there that can be hurt. We can receive the whole suffering of the world. The Buddha had these long ears in these pictures because he was listening to the whole suffering of the whole world of beings, and he could absorb all that suffering because he's empty. And yet listening, and yet receiving, and yet being open and sensitive to the pain, but it doesn't destroy you if there's no you to be destroyed. There's no place to be destroyed. And that's the basis of equanimity. I remember just a small personal example. Two of my grandchildren, they do a lot of fighting with each other. And they sometimes get into it more and sometimes less. And more than once they've been shouting at each other and fighting each other all the time when they're with me. And sometimes my policy as a grandparent is to be totally unpredictable. So that they don't know what's going to happen exactly. And that seems to work quite well. So sometimes I react and stop it. And sometimes I don't. And a few times I just felt that energy of aggression, shouting. And I just felt it in the body. I was sitting, I'm right next to them, they're sitting next to me, and they're shouting at each other, and I just feel the energy passing through. It does something, it's not that it does nothing, I feel it in the belly, I feel it in the body, the vibration of that anger is there, it makes a vibration in me too, and I just feel that vibration and it doesn't go anywhere and do anything, it's just a vibration coming from anger, I feel it. There's other vibrations coming from love. This one comes from anger, feel the vibration, do nothing, doesn't do anything. And then, in a way, because I'm not disturbed, I can turn around to them and say very quietly, that's enough. Finish now. If I was disturbed by their anger or their fighting, then I would add to that energy by myself reacting, stop it, you don't need that. Just a small example, personal example. And think about how you are, each of you, and the people watching this. What about when you're at work and the boss shouts at you? And says, you didn't do your job, you're this, you're that, you're no good, you. Where does it go? Where does it go? What do you do with that? How far does it reach inside? Or, sometimes more painful, would be disease. The body just doesn't do what you expect. You're sick. Do you build anything out of that sickness? I'm sick, it doesn't, my body's not good, maybe it's cancer. Maybe I'm going to have to go to the doctors, I must do something about it, I'm unhealthy, I have to change my diet, I have to take more medicines, I have to, the Bituch Lami is no good, the doctors are no good, the hospital is no good, I'm no good, life is no good. What do we do with sickness? Or is it just unpleasant symptoms passing through, which we certainly can take a pill. But that's also, we take a pill with equanimity. There's quite a famous story about equanimity, a very radical story, a Buddhist story, about a Chinese general that came to a monastery with his army passing through this part of China or the East, and he hammered on the door, and after no one came, and after a while a monk came, and he was getting a bit cross because no one answered him when he hammered on the door. And the monk opened the door and said hello, and the general was annoyed, and the general said, "Do you know who I am?" And the monk said, "No." The general said, "I am this general, and I can cut you in two pieces with my sword without blinking an eye." And the monk said, "You know who I am?" And gave his name and said, "I can be cut into two pieces without blinking an eye." The basis of equanimity, actually like all the paramis, is emptiness and is non-attachment. Attachment is the opposite of equanimity. It's samdut, attachment. When we're stuck with something, when we need to process something, when we need something to be better, when we need something to be different from what it is, when we are not allowing things to be what they are, pass through dynamic life passing through, but we have to do something with it. It sits in us, it creates projections and papancha and story and issues. That's the attachment. And equanimity is not passive. And sometimes we have this mistake that equanimity is rather passive. It's about being cool. "I'm cool, man, everything, I'm really cool. I'm fine, and everything's just really nice." And this coolness is not equanimity. And even though in the paramis equanimity is one of the calming factors, it's different from the energizing factors. It's a calming factor like patience. But it is not passive. And it is not indifferent. Adishut. It's the opposite of adishut. It's the opposite of indifference. Because indifference, or adishut, is not at all equanimous. It's a form of protection. It's another form of the choma, of the protective wall, based on fear. I don't want this. I'm withdrawing from this. I'm stepping back. I don't like, cut it off, shut it down. It's defensive. Haganah. Adishut is Haganah. It's not the same. Passivity is Haganah. It's not the same. Equanimity is active and present and open and sensitive and right there in the middle of life. There's a beautiful image in the T.S. Eliot Four Quartets when he said the difference between non-attachment, or you can say equanimity, and indifference, or adishut, they grow in the same hedge, gader chai, they grow in the same place, but they're as different from each other as life is from death. Very beautiful. It's also not balance, even though equanimity as a translation of upekkha has the word equal in it. When I mentioned the word equal at the beginning of this talk, I mentioned it with a little bit of kind of not supporting it, this word, too strongly. Because life isn't equal. Life is not balanced. Life is not symmetrical. We all say this sometimes, oh, I wish my life was more in balance. All of us say it. I'm working too hard, I need a more balance in my life. How many of you don't say this? We say it every week. Oh, it's a bit out of balance, my life is like this, I need more balance. Life doesn't supply us with balance. Chaim lo mesapek lanu izun. It doesn't. I remember when we were very, very strong memory for me when we were working with Palestinians and Israelis together in Nablus, in these years when we went to Nablus with groups of Israelis every month. Maybe for years and years we went every month. And this came up more than once. That the Palestinians said, look, it's all very well for you to come here, but our suffering is so much greater than yours. You guys sitting in the coffee houses of Tel Aviv, you have plenty of money, you don't have children that are wounded or in wheelchairs, you don't have family members in prison, every family that we have someone killed in our community. We're constantly, the army's in the street, controlling us. And you come here from the coffee houses of Tel Aviv. So this is no symmetry. You can't talk to us about pain. And what we said a few times is that symmetry, the asymmetry, the losymmetriut, the asymmetry is part of the pain. That is the pain. Life cannot be symmetrical. Life cannot be balanced. So, we can't expect it. The voice in us, from the self, if suddenly we have a tragedy happen to us, the self says, Lama ani? As if life should do it to somebody else but not me. But life isn't like that. Life is not balanced. Children do get cancer. Why do they get cancer? I don't know. But life isn't balanced that said, well, why should an innocent child get cancer? It isn't. We cannot expect life to provide us with that balance, with that symmetry, with that. So, equanimity is allowing it to be without balance, without fairness. And without being a victim, either. So how do we develop equanimity? Actually, on Thursday, I'm teaching a weekend in Indore on equanimity. And one of the things that we will be doing is using the phrases, and the phrases are a method which is traditional of using language to support a shift in the state of mind or in the view. And we do that with all the Brahma Viharas. And I just want to read to you the kind of sentences that we use for equanimity. And these can be sentences that you could use in your life in order to help practice equanimity. And they're sentences we use for metta, for karuna, for compassion, for mudita, and for equanimity, which are said as a way of triggering the heart or triggering the memory to be aware of this quality in us. It's a trigger. It's not something we need to say 1,000 times. It's a trigger to trigger a certain understanding and a certain movement in the heart. So the sentences that we use for equanimity, the phrases, the mantra, I'm just going to say them and we'll have just a small break of few seconds after each one. Just absorb the sentence and I'll ring a bell as well. May I accept things as they are. May I not be disturbed by the coming and going of events. My happiness or unhappiness are the result of conditions and how I am with them, and not my wishes for myself. We can also practice equanimity in all our meditations by simply the quality of allowing things to be what they are without selecting them and choosing them, without choosing the comfortable, without rejecting the uncomfortable. This equality, to be equal with pleasant or unpleasant, is a fundamental training in equanimity. I am ready for pleasant, I am ready for unpleasant. I let go of my interest that things should be a certain way. We do that in our meditation more or less from the first day that we learn how to meditate. It is fundamental in Buddhist meditation. And it's liberating quality inside. And people, this is, you go to MBSR course, beginning mindfulness-based stress reduction in a course in the hospital. It'll be there. The first day you do a course Mevo in Tovana, people come for a course, you know, it's there. It's fundamental. This movement of being less interested in things being a certain way, having to be a certain way. Besides this, our quality of, like I said before, sitting steady in the middle of life, our ability just to sit steady, never mind what comes up, is another practice of equanimity. Sitting like a rock, sitting like a king or a queen. But the most important, I think, and the most powerful movement, training in equanimity is the quality of emptiness. And that really is, of course, the basis of all the paramis, and especially of this one. The sense that our center is empty. We don't have defenses and boundaries and walls, but we have an empty center, like the glass. Things go through us. I mean, just think about for a moment, very, very simple things. If in the middle of meditation, outside the door, there was an ambulance or a police car with a siren, me, 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 really loud, right next to the door here, and we're sitting meditation. So where does that go in us? What do we do with that? Is it a disturbance? Do we think, oh, something's happened, I have to be worried about something, someone is sick, or the police coming because there's a bomb, or, you know, are we doing anything with it? Are we disturbed in our body? Are we thinking, oh, this is a terrible place, or I'll never get peace, I need to go immediately to Klil to meditate, this is terrible to meditate in Tel Aviv, can't bear it, all the sirens all the time. Do we do something with it? Or is it just a noise that creates a vibration in us? And that's it. And passes. I want to read to you a beautiful image of meditation which has that sense of the bigness of things, the emptiness of things, where nothing need disturb us. And it's actually the Buddha gave this instruction to his son, but it appears several times in the text. And the quote is like this. Develop meditation that is like the earth, for then pleasant and unpleasant contacts with the world through the senses will not invade the mind. Just as people throw clean or dirty things or shit or urine or spit or blood on the earth, and the earth is not horrified or disgusted or alarmed, but absorbs it all. And then the same thing with the other elements. Just develop meditation that is like the water, for the same reason. Develop meditation that is like the fire. Develop meditation that is like the air, for then agreeable, comfortable, pleasant or unpleasant contact with the world from the senses will not invade the mind. As a parami, when we talk about paramis, we're talking about change in the personality. And we're talking about something that is not just an experience, but something built into our being. And so when equanimity becomes a parami, we live it, we live like that. And I think we can feel how that might have been growing in us through our practice. That we feel life is more like a dance, that is change, that is less personal, that we don't have to absorb everything and be disturbed by everything that happens. And that I'm sure that there's a difference. At the beginning of our practice, what happens when the police car siren outside, right at the beginning of our practice, what we do with that, and after 5 years of sitting retreats, what we do with that same police car, the noise, how we are with that, and that's the change. We are freeing ourselves slowly, slowly, through being in the stream, rather than having to be always under the wave, stopping the stream, but allowing the stream to take us, being a bit more like a leaf on the water, rather than standing there and having to stop the stream or push it or do something with it. And it's interesting that the practice of equanimity, we can do it with a specific event, like the police car, the noise of the police car or ambulance. Slowly, slowly, we become equanimous to the whole universe. And there is an interesting sequence which when I read it, one of the suttas, it really touched me. Now the Buddha talked about a sequence or a development, starting with equanimity in relation to specific events, noise, for example, or experience in the body, or a thought in the mind, or a feeling, an emotion. With practice, equanimity is then in relation to the whole universe. That your sense that the whole universe is there, and you are part of it, and you're not different from it, and nothing in the universe can be disturbing. The whole universe, the cosmos, and you are together. And that's the next stage. The stage after that is where, from equanimity, you don't need to construct any constructions in relation to life. Mivnim. Don't need to build anything. It's the word atamayata. The unfabricated world, and I won't go into that now, but there's no need to fabricate or construct anything in life. Life just passing through. And that stage is a stage before Nibbana. After that comes Nibbana. So it's very nice, it's a deep understanding of the importance of equanimity as a preparation for Nibbana. And now we're talking about something on a subtle level. And here we're in the territory of the subtle parami. And equanimity in relation to the whole cosmos, it has a sense that the whole cosmos is raw material. That because nothing is disturbing, so nothing is really... there's no dramas left. Everything is. The whole cosmos is there. There's no drama that you need, or there's no problem you need to solve. The whole universe is there as raw material, as homogenin. And that sense of sameness, that the whole cosmos is one thing with you, and it's a quality of sameness, it's subtle equanimity, it's on the subtle level. It makes everything workable. You wake up in the morning, there isn't so much difference between the bird flying across and a tsunami in somewhere, or how your tummy feels, or it's all workable, it's all homogenim, it's all part of consciousness, it's all received and passing through. You're not in the usual human dramas anymore. Of this, good, and this, terrible, I need this, this is bad, I can't cope with this, this is too much, this whole, the waves of change that knock us and knock us and knock us all the time. We're not knocked over by any waves. And that makes everything sort of the same, but not boring, but special, but the same in some way. The whole cosmos is there. And there is a quote that describes this, and it's really quite a high stage of meditation, and the Buddha talks about equanimity being quite a high stage of meditation. I won't go into all the technical aspects of meditation practice through concentration, how concentration practice includes equanimity. It's the stage, it's the development of jhana. Jhanas are, there's eight jhanas, and each jhana goes to the next through equanimity. Equanimity develops one stage after another. Like the first jhana, there's a lot of rapture, energy, like electricity in the body. You feel kazeh, like electricity, joy, rapture, bliss, waves of energy, you know. And then, but it lacks equanimity. Equanimity comes and it softens that to the next jhana. And then equanimity comes and softens that to the next jhana. And the third jhana is the characteristic of Sviatratson. More contentment, much quieter, much steadier. And then it goes to the fourth jhana, which is very pure equanimity, etc., etc. So, in the end, the Buddha said, in the end, after you really practice a lot, all that's left is equanimity. That's all that's left. Which is pure and bright and soft, workable, and shining. Just like a skilled goldsmith will take some gold, will prepare the fire and heat it and put in the gold, and from time to time it will burn, and from time to time he will blow on it, and from time to time he will sprinkle it with water, and from time to time he will just look at it. And the gold will be well refined, zukak, will have no impurity, will be rid of impurity, will be workable, will be shining. And with this gold, you can make any jewelry or anything out of it, and that is equanimity. Not now. There is the big, it leads us to the big vision. This is the final sentence here. In a way, we don't have a choice. No one asked us if we wanted to be born. No one will ask us if we want to die. No one asks us or tells us what we're going to have in our life, what experiences. We're not asked. Experiences come and go without our control. The truth arises, but the truth isn't interested in us. We have to just allow ourselves to live in the truth of awareness and of equanimity, being with things as they are, as they pass through. And we find in this a deep, deep peace in the middle of change. To be like the leaf on the water, deeply peaceful, but in the middle of change, in the middle of the unexpected, without resistance, without the need for it to be anything else. And this place is very pure. It's allowing the cosmos to be what it is with us inside it, without resistance, without the need for it to be anything other than what it is. Thank you, sir.